Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
I'm John Oran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
What about that, Jeff? Do you think they're that far off or not?
I think he makes a lot of good points, Tommy. And I know there was a lot of people just aggravated. I think a lot of LSU fans were thinking they would just walk into Columbia, South Carolina, win by a couple touchdowns, and go back to Baton Rouge. And yeah, I had the prediction of LSU winning 30-16. I think it was something like that. I thought they could win by a couple touchdowns myself, but the way the game played out, South Carolina jumped on them fast. And you see this a lot with 11 o'clock games. That was a raucous environment, a fan base that was fired up because their team had just defeated somebody else by 25 points on the road, probably looking at LSU being a little vulnerable. And they jumped all over LSU, and they went up 17-0. But and that's frustrating. And that's frustrating as a fan base to watch them give up too long rushing touchdowns. It's frustrating to see them get inside the 5-yard line and not score. So that's now three trips inside the 5-yard line this year, and they failed to score a touchdown. And those are things that Brian Kelly talked about yesterday as far as trying to address. But you can't ignore the fact that you're down 17-0, and you had, I want to say they had just 7 total yards in that first quarter, and you somehow figured out a way to win. And in the end, this is a result-oriented business, right? And what you're supposed to do is win football games. And it's not always going to be pretty. And so you got to give them credit. Now, are they at the level of where Texas and Alabama is at this moment? You know, going on the road and beating the pants off of two teams and winning decisively? No, they're not. And they may not get there this year either, Tommy, but what I like about Brian Kelly is when you listen to him talk and you heard he gives a lot of great detail, mm-hmm. and you can tell he has an idea of where he wants to go and he has a plan on how to try to get there. I think it's just taking longer to get there than most fans would like.
Tell me about defense on the back end and still some confusion there. I don't quite understand what's going on. Do you?
Well, you also have to look at, there were several new starters in this game. You were starting a true freshman at safety in Deshaun Spears. Zy Alexander gets his first start at cornerback this season. Whit Weeks gets a start. Parrish Shand is started in the middle of your defensive line. So several, and this again also contributes to the potential or the reason on why South Carolina in that first series just marched right down the field against LSU, and the Tigers didn't have a chance. And I think people forget about that as well when you kind of take a look at how the game played out. So Brian Kelly talked about it yesterday about, you still have two new first-year coordinators who are trying to figure out what's the right 11 to have out there, what's the right type of schemes to have out there in certain situations, and this is just all a work in progress. And the good news is, Tom, and I alluded to it in the story that I got up at WWL.com right now, is they got 3 weeks to really kind of figure this stuff out. UCLA coming up this Saturday, and then they host South Alabama, two games that are very winnable. Then you have a bye week, and then you get your next major test against Ole Miss, and you get them at home. So they got 3 weeks to figure it out. We'll see if they can get there. no promises. But again, listening to Brian Kelly talk yesterday, he has an idea of what needs to get done, whether they have enough talent to get it done and do they have enough time to get it done. That for this season, it's still a question mark.
Tell me a little bit more what Brian Kelly had to say yesterday.
Well, I mean, he focused in on three things that they need to figure out. They need to figure out personnel, right? So I just mentioned, had a whole bunch of different new starters. All of a sudden in that game, Caden Durham, freshman running back, kind of comes out of nowhere, rushes for 98 yards for you, gets two touchdowns. So I'm sure they got to figure out the running back rotation. Kelly talked yesterday that, you know, it's not going to be like Durham is not going to be the number one back. They're still going to sprinkle in Josh Williams and Caleb Jackson.
Wait,
but I think you're going to see more of Caden Durham.
He is going to be the number one back, or he's not going to be?
He is not. At this point, he's not ready to anoint him as the number one running back.
All right.
I think he still wants to get Josh Williams some carries. He still wants to get Caleb Jackson some carries, but is Caden Durham still going to be? Is Caden Durham going to be a bigger part of this offense from here on out? I think so. I mean, that was exactly what you needed at that time when you were down 17-0. You needed somebody to step up, and nobody would have thought that one of the smallest guys on the team and a true freshman playing on the road for the first time would be able to do that. But he did
it. He runs a lot bigger than he is. I'll tell you that.
He's very similar to Clyde Edwards-Helaire, I thought. I thought kind of that same type of running style. They're still figuring things out on defense, too. The schemes that Kelly talked about, you know, I mentioned it earlier. You've had, through 3 weeks this season, you've had three trips inside the five-yard line, and you're not scoring. And Coach Brian Kelly says, hey, that's coaching. We're not – whatever their plan is once they get inside the five-yard line is not working. So the coaches got to figure it out. They got to get the right personnel on the field. These long touchdown runs that have hurt the Tigers the last couple of weeks, they got to figure that out. What's happening there? Get the right personnel out there. So
was that about personnel or discipline?
Very much a work in progress.
Those two quarterback runs, was that discipline or personnel?
Well, I think on one of those touchdown runs, you had a true freshman in Ahmad Breaux, who was a defensive end at Ruston High School last year, trying to play defensive tackle in the SEC. He got, he basically got himself in a bad situation and couldn't cover the hole. Mm-hmm. Whit Weeks makes a poor read on one of the touchdown runs. Sage Ryan, a senior safety, got juked out on that long quarterback run. I mean, it's a variety of things that guys are making mistakes, and they gotta. And I always hate when coaches say, got to clean it up. But, they got to clean those kind of things up. They got to figure out why those things are happening and teach them better and teach better technique so that the next time a quarterback, and so, you know, a big quarterback busts through the into the secondary, the safety can make the tackle instead of, you know, getting his ankles broken on the play. So, and I mean that, you know, figuratively, not literally. But it's these are things that they're trying to coach up, and again, I think where fans are get upset about it is just that it's not that they look at it. Hey, Brian, this is Brian Kelly's third year. These things shouldn't be happening, and there's some argument to be made, but again, you gotta look at where they were coming from defensively and where they're trying to get to. And as Brian Kelly, I think, even said after the USC game, these things are just not going to get fixed overnight.
And also, I think you have to realize that a coach's third year, and look, this applies to everybody, not just Brian Kelly, but with the transfer portal and name, image, and likeness, it's not like it used to be a coach's third year, right?
Well, I think fans look at it and say,
I know it's for everybody.
The fans say, hey, you got the transfer portal now. You don't have to sit there and recruit a kid out of high school and then wait 3 years to develop. You can just go into the transfer portal and pick out Joe Burrow and Jaden Daniels, and, you know, you should be fine. Well, it worked out for Joe Burrow and Jaden Daniels, but it doesn't happen. And it's not like there's – you know, there's a reason why some of these guys are in the transfer portal to begin with, because they weren't good enough to play at their other school, and now they think they're good enough, and they really truly are not. We could sit here and take a look at maybe some mistakes that Brian Kelly made when he first got here, right? I mean, not keeping Corey Raymond, the defensive backs coach, Matt House, the defensive coordinator. On paper, it seemed like a good hire. It just didn't work out. It sets your program back. It's kind of like when you, in the NFL, you draft, look at the Carolina Panthers. They drafted Bryce Young as their number one quarterback. 2 years later, or I guess 18, 19 games into it, I think they've realized, well, this isn't really the guy for us, or at least not the guy. You know, these decisions get made, it seems great on paper. Bryce Young, hey, great quarterback at Alabama. Looks like he'll be great in the NFL, and it doesn't work out for whatever reason. So, and Matt House did not work out for whatever reason, even though on paper it looked like a very solid hire. So things have happened, and you got to just kind of keep pushing and pressing forward until eventually you get everything in place that you would like to get in place. And it's still September.
So it is,
September,
and you got,
and they got time.
Like you're saying, you got 2 weeks in September to get it figured out against UCLA and then South Alabama. You think they do by the time they play Ole Miss on October 12th?
Well, it's going to be tough because Ole Miss has got a lot of talent. I would say Ole Miss is, well, you just have to look at the rankings. Even in the preseason rankings, Ole Miss ranked higher than LSU. And the reason why they're ranked higher than LSU is because they got more talent. And so it's going to be a tough game. I think you can look at certain things and say that they have made strides from week one to week three. And Brian Kelly says they're close. They're close. So we'll see. What you don't want to see this Saturday against UCLA, a team that absolutely got hammered at home by Indiana, you want to see them execute in the red zone. You want to see them prevent the big play on the ground and see, just continue to see if, continue to see this offense click, with this offense and Garrett Nussmeier. And Garrett Nussmeier showed it on Saturday. When you got a quarterback as good as him, you're never out of a ball game. Yep. And that was on full display this past Saturday.
And a tough guy, you got to get defense figured out is what you got to get too. Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate your time as always. Jeff Palermo, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network News Director. We come back, we're going to talk to Mark Drews, Director of Public Works for Jefferson Parish, about Francine and a pumping station and what went on with the Duncan Canal, which is controlled, I think, some of the pumps by the airport, which is more of a bifurcated system, which kind of makes no sense to me. We'll talk about all that when we come back on WWL.
I'm John Oran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
9:30 now, a couple of days after Francine. Mark Drews joins us, Director of Public Works for Jefferson Parish. We wanted to talk to Mark about a couple of different things. And if y'all have any questions or comments, the Oconar Jeweler Talking text line's open. You can text your questions in to 504-260-1870, and I'll pass them along. How you doing, Mark? Did you get some rest, finally catch up a little bit?
Weekend got a little bit of a break, but it's been busy.
Yeah, I bet it has been. Let's talk about, first of all, I think I got to start this because one thing I keep going back to, it's kind of like, almost like a circular question where I understand, and we'll talk about the differences with the airport and who's in charge of what pumps and this and power and all that. But one incontrovertible fact is that there was an overwhelming amount of rainfall that when you're in an area that's below sea level or at sea level is going to cause problems, right? I mean, that's what no matter what, you got to go back to that, accurate or not?
Yeah, that's accurate. Look, this storm dumped more water than the system could handle, even if I had every pump running for every minute. What you're looking at is what was unique about this storm was that this storm covered the entire East Bank at one time. I didn't have like a heavy concentration in Kenner where I can get help because all of our pump stations are basically connected. If you're familiar, I'm sure you are, with the West Esplanade Canal, it runs the entire length of the parish. That's east-west, and all of my pump stations are on a north-south canal that brings water as far as from basically River Road all the way to the lake. So they can equalize. So if I have issues where I'm getting a heavy rain in Kenner, then that water can equalize east-west, and then the next pump station, Elmwood, can help pump that down as well. But in this case, every one of my pumps along the lake was overwhelmed because we had 7 to 9 inches total on everywhere in the East Bank. That was the average. And then what was more critical was from roughly, I believe it was 5 to 8, 4 to 6 inches in that 3-hour period. And that was just way too much for the system to handle.
So when it comes to this thing that we hear constantly about an inch the first hour, half an inch thereafter, that's all averages. That's not for the entire system, or is it, Mark, in Jefferson Parish?
Well, that's typically each pump system can handle that, okay? So we may be able to handle a little more just because of the way everything's interconnected, but it's not going to be significantly more. But like I said, in this event, every one of my pump stations basically roughly at from 6 o'clock to 9:30, the height of the water in the canal at all those pump stations jumped 6 feet.
So if... I don't know if there's any way. First of all, let me ask this. What do we know happened? What do you know happened now with Duncan Canal or with pumps? And what did go out and what caused the outage there?
I had two significant issues in the pumping system. Okay, we look at like Bonneville Canal, 100% the whole time pumping. Suburban pumping 100%. Duncan, which is in Kenner, okay, we have 6 pumps at Duncan, okay? So what happened, I basically had, I believe it was 5 pumps were running, roughly around 5:30 when one of the pumps shut itself off because the coolant temperature had increased, it was too hot. So it shut that pump down, okay? So immediately we had the 6 pumps we hadn't turned on yet. So we went to try to get the 6 pumps started. It wouldn't start. Okay, we actually around 10 o'clock, because we still couldn't get it started, and that was roughly we started just after 5:30 trying to get it running. We actually changed the starter out. That didn't work. We didn't find out till the next day that there was a chip in the control panel that governs the startup that was actually had become defective. So we figured that one out. The other one, as I said, shut off because it should. Once those coolant temperatures get too high, we have the possibility of burning up a motor. So we lost 2 pumps out of the 6 at Duncan basically after 5:30. The other issue was at the airport pump station. It's a smaller pump station, and they were struggling throughout the day with 3 out of 4 pumps. The airport, the aviation board, the airport runs that pump station. Okay, it's the only pump station we don't operate, but we have SCADA, so we can see what's happening. We had called them because we saw what was happening. That 3 of that pumps would come on for maybe 10 minutes. They would be off of 50. They were trying to get them back on maybe 10 minutes. They went back off, but that happened for most of the day. So they were basically pumping with 1 pump the entire day, and they basically said like us. I mean, they were trying to work out the problems, and they just weren't able to correct it.
So I'm looking at a map, Mark, and I'm trying to figure out what does the airport pumping station drain?
It's basically a portion of South Kenner, okay, that and the airport, and the airport has a pretty good acreage that will come that way to the airport pump station, and it will pump there. There is a bypass, so if the airport pump station's not functioning, that water will continue to our parish line pump station.
You know, I've only lived one other place in my life, and I was in Las Vegas for like 8 months in the 80s, and honestly, I wasn't as involved in that kind of thing as I am now, so I don't know what kind of divisions there are, but Would it be more efficient for the parish to take over the aviation board instead of the aviation board being in a pumping station business or not?
That's something we will look at, Tommy. That decision was made, when that pump station was built, that it was, the location of it catches the water before it reaches parish line. And it's on airport property. They decided that, we would build it there and run it. But we're certainly willing to discuss with them, the possibility of maybe our people running it and getting them out of the pumping business. But that's something, we will look at as we go forward.
And when you say aviation board, is that the city of New Orleans and is that Sewage and Water Board or not?
No, to my understanding, it's not the Sewage and Water Board. It's the airport that handles that pump station.
And the result of three of four of their pumps not working resulted in what, as far as you know it? The water, more water being put into the Jefferson Parish?
No, that's the smallest pump station by far. It's 600 CFS. I'll compare it to Duncan, which has 4,800 CFS.
Okay.
It has an effect, but it's minimal compared to the other larger pump stations if I had that same issue. But I can tell you this. I had Bonneville Pump Station, which every pump ran 100% of the time. That station, the elevation actually rose 8 feet from 6 to 9:30, and I had flooding in Bucktown. I have 6 confirmed houses that went under. So like I'm telling you, in this case, I have a pump station and even Suburban, and we have pump stations that were 100% capacity and still were overwhelmed. It would have been nice to have those pumps working at 100%, but it would not have stopped the overtopping that we saw and the majority of the flooding.
The pump that shut off because of overheating, that was just like it was operating normally. It just did something cause it to overheat? I'm just curious as to how all that works.
Yeah, we're still investigating that. We're not sure why it's overheating. We actually got that pump back up and running like 3 in the morning and ran it again. But we're still in the investigation because there's multiple reasons why it could have, overheated. So we're still working on trying to narrow that down because it can be in the electronic controls. It could be in the pump itself. So that we're working on trying to find out what exactly happened to that pump.
All right, let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back talking to Mark Drews, Director of Public Works for Jefferson Parish, talking about what happened with the pumping station. How are we referring to that at the Duncan Canal? Is the Duncan pumping station?
Yeah, we call it the Duncan because it's on the Duncan Canal in Kenner. It's west of Williams.
All right, we'll pick it up there. We come back talking to Mark Drews after Francine. What happened? How did it happen? What's to do in the future, et cetera? If you have any questions, comments, 504-260-1870, 940 Traffic WWL. 9:47, 13 before 10, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Mark Drews, Director of Public Works for Jefferson Parish. I am as much for holding everybody responsible as is anybody else, but I am also a guy that deals in facts and the truth, and I got to go back, Mark Drews, and ask you what kind of rainfall fell in what period of time?
Basically, from 5 to 8 was the peak. We averaged roughly 4 to 6 inches in that 3-hour period. We still had rain going for another hour, basically, till 9 o'clock. So if you want to look at 5 to 9 was the critical portion when the system became overwhelmed. Canal levels were actually below normal, roughly around 6. But that's when that, water started at 5, started building up. And of course, since everything's saturated, all the rain that's falling is basically going into the system. And that's when the canals jumped roughly 6 feet, peaking around 9:30 at night.
What was the situation in Elmwood?
Elmwood, we had 9 pumps running until I believe it was around 7:30, 9 out of 10. We have 10 pumps at Elmwood. Mm-hmm. And then one of the pumps went down. We had one pump that went down, and we were able to start it up at 2. There was another pump we had lost, and we were not able to start it. So we basically had 8 pumps out of 10 pumping the entire time. We had 9 pumps out of 10 working except for, I think it was maybe a two-hour period at most. So we basically had well over 90% of pumping capacity at Elmwood. So, you know, we had some issues, but it was nothing as significant as what we had at Duncan and at the airport.
Friend of mine had her car flooded. It was parked in her driveway in Metairie. You know, that makes me feel bad for her. I get, somebody said yesterday, and I think it's a good phrase, sick to your stomach when you see a house flood. I don't think you feel any differently than that. But with all that being said, is it realistic to expect in a flood event like this, every pump to work perfectly and not have any technical problems at all?
No, and again, Tommy, we tested all of our pumps during that week before, some of them just on Monday of that week to make sure that they were all up and operating correctly. And then during this event, you know, we experienced mechanical issues with, you know, roughly maybe about four of our pumps, which, you know, it's, you know, the law of averages is you're going to have some issues. It's a mechanical system. It does have multiple failure points. I mean, you have electric controls, you have the pump itself. So there's a lot of things that, you know, go into that pump running correctly. And like anything, it's, you know, we've had other events where, you know, we'll have a pump go down and we're working feverishly to get it up. It's just that we don't have that volume of rain where, you know, it reaches the level where it becomes a significant problem. But it is a mechanical system and it's, you know, it's not a perfect system.
Let me get to this text, Mark, that says, we're sick of hearing it was just too much rain. Act like there's an 11th commandment, thou shalt not build more pumps. I will say this, and then I'll turn it over to you. First of all, it was a lot of rain. Secondly, as a contractor will tell you, they can do anything you want if you got the money for it, right? So just address that, if you will, please, about the increasing incidences of rainfall, whether people want to admit it or not, it is a fact, and also about, you know, if you want to expand the pumping system, you can, but somebody's got to pay for that, right?
Yeah, Tommy, you just need to go back, and when the sealer program was started after the 95 flood, okay, several billion dollars was spent upgrading our north-south main canals to a 10-year design storm. And then after Katrina, same thing was done at all of our major pump stations on the lake. They were hardened. They were given safe houses to operate during a storm, and we had some increased capacity to bring those up to that 10-year storm. So you're talking billions of dollars to get us to that point. So to increase the capacity of the pump stations, it doesn't do me any good unless I can increase the capacity of our drainage canal system, which, you know, already went a significant upgrade, and we're restricted. Because, again, if I really want to take another step, not will it be several billions of dollars, I have to widen those canals, which, you know, we're restricted on the East Bank. So, yes, obviously, like anything, money is an issue, and not just for the drainage system, but also for our water, sewer, and all of our systems.
If everything had worked perfectly with that amount of rainfall, there still would have been flooding. Is that accurate?
Absolutely, because like I told you, Bonneville Suburban worked 100% the entire time. They had the same spike in elevation as the other two pump stations, Elmwood and Duncan. I had flooding, like I said, on the entire east side in Bucktown, okay? There's nowhere near the Duncan pump station, the Elmwood. I have Suburban and Bonneville, you know, they go from east to west with no issues at all, and I still had flooding there, which tells me, you know, yes, even if all these pumps were pumping, I still would have had issues that we saw, you know, after the storm had passed.
I don't, and look, again, I feel for this person that had their car flooded. I feel for people that had their houses flooded. But I think people do need to take into effect that it was a hurricane, and the National Weather Service did talk about these corridors of heavy rain, and that's exactly what happened. Talk, if you will, Mark, about the rain that we had gotten before, about the saturation of the ground, the part that played in this, and also people want to know about canals being pumped down to empty, but you can't do that, as I understand it, can you?
You can pump it down maybe a foot. After that, you have trouble because, you know, our intakes at the pumps, if it becomes too low, then my pumps, I can't even start them, okay? But there's other factors. If I drain, you know, I have a water table. If I drain it, you know, more than like a foot down, okay, then my canals become susceptible to failure, canal bank failure. and then I'm trying to draw the water table down, which can cause other issues. But I can tell you, even in this case, we did that. We dropped it to, you know, typically about a foot below, and at 6 p.m., every one of my canals at those outfalls, those four major outfalls, was actually below normal levels at 6. And it was just the fact that with all the saturation, when that storm sat over us basically for that 3 hours, every drop of rain now, there's no storage. It's all going right into the canal system, and that's what overwhelmed us.
So as it stands now, you know, there were equipment failures, right, and stuff breaks. It's mechanical, it does break, and it's electrical, it does fail. But is there anything you could or would have done differently beforehand, or are you confident in saying you did everything you could beforehand to prevent Jefferson Parish from flooding?
Yeah, I mean, we did what we always do before a storm. We tested every pump in the system to make sure that the pump was operating at the time. Okay, so, I mean, that's step one, and that was done. So, I mean, the preparation was there. Okay, and then, like, every event is different, and then we do our best during the event to respond to whatever, you know, obstacles occur during the time, and that's what we did in this case, just like we've done in the past.
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate your time. Take it easy.
All right. Thank you.
You bet. Mark Drews, Director of Public Works for Jefferson Parish. And I think, and again, my heart goes out to people whose house flooded. I can't imagine dealing with that. A friend of mine flooded. I had a car that's flooded. But it was an extraordinary amount of rainfall, and I think sometimes we forget that. 9:55, we'll find out what Newell's got planned for us when we come back on WWL. 9:47, 13 before 10, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Mark Drews, Director of Public Works for Jefferson Parish. I am as much for holding everybody responsible as is anybody else, but I am also a guy that deals in facts and the truth, and I got to go back, Mark Drews, and ask you what kind of rainfall fell in what period of time?
Basically, from 5 to 8 was the peak. We averaged roughly 4 to 6 inches in that 3-hour period. We still had rain going for another hour, basically, till 9 o'clock. So if you want to look at 5 to 9 was the critical portion when the system became overwhelmed. Canal levels were actually below normal, roughly around 6. But that's when that, you know, water started at 5, started building up. And, of course, since everything's saturated, all the rain that's falling is basically going into the system. And that's when the canals jumped roughly 6 feet, peaking around 9:30 at night.
What was the situation in Elmwood?
Elmwood, we had 9 pumps running until I believe it was around 7:30. 9 out of 10, we have 10 pumps at Elmwood. And then one of the pumps went down. One pump, we had one pump that went down, and we were able to start it up at 2. There was another pump we had lost, and we were not able to start it. So we basically had 8 pumps out of 10 pumping the entire time. We had 9 pumps out of 10 working, except for I think it was maybe a 2-hour period at most. So we basically had well over 90% of pumping capacity at Elmwood. So, you know, we had some issues, but it was nothing as significant as what we had at Duncan and at the airport.
Friend of mine had her car flooded. It was parked in her driveway in Metairie. You know, that makes me feel bad for her. I get, somebody said yesterday, and I think it's a good phrase, sick to your stomach when you see a house flood. I don't think you feel any differently than that. But with all that being said, is it realistic to expect in a flood event like this, every pump to work perfectly and not have any technical problems at all?
No, and again, Tommy, we tested all of our pumps during that week before, some of them just on Monday of that week, to make sure that they were all up and operating correctly. And then during this event, you know, we experienced mechanical issues with, you know, roughly maybe 2, maybe about 4 of our pumps, which, you know, it's the law of averages is you're going to have some issues. It's a mechanical system. It does have multiple failure points. I mean, you have electric controls, you have the pump itself. So there's a lot of things that, you know, go into that pump running correctly. And like anything, it's, you know, we've had other events where, you know, we'll have a pump go down and we're working feverishly to get it up. It's just that we don't have that volume of rain where, you know, it reaches the level where it becomes a significant problem. But it is a mechanical system, and it's, you know, it's not a perfect system.
Let me get to this text, Mark, that says, we're sick of hearing it was just too much rain. Act like there's an 11th commandment, thou shalt not build more pumps. I will say this, and then I'll turn it over to you. First of all, it was a lot of rain. Secondly, as a contractor will tell you, they can do anything you want if you got the money for it, right? So just address that, if you will, please, about the increasing incidences of rainfall, whether people want to admit it or not, it is a fact. And also about, you know, if you want to expand the pumping system, you can, but somebody's got to pay for that, right?
Yeah, Tommy, you just need to go back. And when the SELA program was started after the 95 flood, okay, several billion dollars was spent upgrading our north-south main canals to a 10-year design storm. And then after Katrina, same thing was done at all of our major pump stations on the lake. They were hardened. They were given safe houses to operate during a storm, and we had some increased capacity to bring those up to that 10-year storm. So you're talking billions of dollars to get us to that point. So to increase the capacity of the pump stations, it doesn't do me any good unless I can increase the capacity of our drainage canal system, which, you know, already went a significant upgrade, and we're restricted. Because, again, if I really want to take another step, not will it be several billions of dollars, I have to widen those canals, which, you know, we're restricted on the East Bank. So, yes, obviously, like anything, money is an issue, and not just for the drainage system, but also for our water, sewer, and all of our systems.
If everything had worked perfectly with that amount of rainfall, there still would have been flooding. Is that accurate?
Absolutely, because like I told you, Bonneville, Suburban, worked 100% the entire time. They had the same spike in elevation as the other two pump stations, Elmwood and Duncan. I had flooding, like I said, on the entire east side in Bucktown, okay? There's nowhere near the Duncan pump station, the Elmwood. I have Suburban and Bonneville, you know, they go from east to west with no issues at all, and I still had flooding there, which tells me, you know, yes, even if all these pumps were pumping, I still would have had issues that we saw, you know, after the storm had passed.
I don't, and look, again, I feel for this person that had their car flooded. I feel for people that had their houses flooded. But I think people do need to take into effect that it was a hurricane, and the National Weather Service did talk about these corridors of heavy rain, and that's exactly what happened. Talk, if you will, Mark, about the rain that we had gotten before, about the saturation of the ground, the part that played in this, and also people want to know about canals being pumped down to empty, but you can't do that, as I understand it, can you?
You can pump it down maybe a foot. After that, you have trouble because, you know, our intakes at the pumps, if it becomes too low, then my pumps, I can't even start, okay? But there's other factors. If I drain, you know, I have a water table. If I drain it, you know, more than like a foot down, okay, then my canals become susceptible to failure, canal bank failure, and then I'm trying to draw the water table down, which can cause other issues. But I can tell you, even in this case, we did that. We dropped it to, you know, typically about a foot below. And at 6 p.m., every one of my canals at those outfalls, those four major outfalls, was actually below normal levels at 6. And it was just the fact that with all the saturation, when that storm sat over us basically for that 3 hours, every drop of rain now, there's no storage. It's all going right into the canal system, and that's what overwhelmed us.
So as it stands now, you know, there were equipment failures, right, and stuff breaks. It's mechanical, it does break, and it's electrical, it does fail. But is there anything you could or would have done differently beforehand, or did you do? Are you confident in saying you did everything you could beforehand to prevent Jefferson Parish from flooding?
Yeah, I mean, we did what we always do before a storm. We tested every pump in the system to make sure that the pump was operating at the time, okay? So, I mean, that's step one, and that was done. So, I mean, the preparation was there, okay? And then, like, every event is different, and then we do our best during the event to respond to whatever, you know, obstacles occur during the time, and that's what we did in this case, just like we've done in the past.
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate your time. Take it easy.
All right. Thank you.
You bet. Mark Drews, Director of Public Works for Jefferson Parish, and I think, and again, my heart goes out to people whose house flooded. I can't imagine dealing with that. A friend of mine flooded, had a car that's flooded. But it was an extraordinary amount of rainfall, and I think sometimes we forget that. 9:55, we'll find out what Newell's got planned for us when we come back on WWL.
I'm John Aran, Pucks sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.